William Starling carried the packet back into the dining room where his wife and son were seated. In those days, most families did their most ambitious cooking for the midday Sunday dinner, but the Starlings were theatrical. And you cannot give a good Sunday matinee on a full stomach. Therefore, Sunday breakfast was Mary's showcase meal of the week, a matter of sweet rolls and fresh juice, sausages, bacon, and thick, cheesy omelets. They ate these breakfasts at a table set with linen napkins, silver cutlery, and the good china. On Sunday mornings, the Starlings could enjoy a leisurely family meal. But when William came back into the dining room, he couldn't contain his curiosity. He pushed his unfinished plate aside. From inside the packet, he pulled two long envelopes, one small, heavy red silk bag, and one thick sheet of paper covered with words arranged in lines as straight as soldiers on a battlefield. He read this letter through silently. When he had finished, he looked across the table to his wife and waited, watching her. She waited, watching him. Neither of them looked at Max, who had also stopped eating but did not speak. He knew better than to interrupt the drama they were creating. William set the letter down on the table, pulled his plate close again, and picked up his fork. Patient, silent, Mary watched, waiting, until at last she burst out laughing and said, "All right, William, I give up. I'll ask if you're going to be so theatrical about it. What does the letter say?" "It says," her husband began and filled his mouth with sausage. After he had chewed for an irritatingly long time and swallowed and savored the last of his orange juice, he said, in a voice that vibrated like a tuning fork, "It promises, my dearling, that a great adventure awaits us." "That's unfortunate," remarked Mary, with no more interest than if he had just told her she had toast crumbs on her chin. She rose from the table. William was not the only dramatist in the family. "Seeing that we have a full schedule of performances from now until..." She half turned in the doorway and paused, as if to think. "I believe the middle of September, with no time for adventures."
"All right," William said. "All right, Mary, you win. Come back, sit down, and lend me your ears."
When she had done as he asked, he announced, as if he were addressing a great crowd from a great height,
"On this first day of April, the Starling Theatrical Company has received a letter from deepest India, a letter written by the Maharaja of Kashmir himself, in his own hand. The most excellent and skillful William Starling, I'm quoting now, and his most beautiful and talented wife..." These are his exact words,
William Starling said, facing the letter outward and waving it gently, as if his wife and son could read moving script. He used his own voice to tell her,
"We've been invited to spend several months or more in his Raj. In India, Mary! We've never been to India! And what do you say to that, my most beautiful and talented wife?"
She answered slowly, "I say it's very odd. Very odd indeed. What use can he have for us?"
"He wants us to create a theatre company for him, like in Elizabethan England, a troupe of actors to entertain his court and to travel among his villages, performing. He wants us to find people of talent and teach them how to act, and introduce them to plays and show them how to produce a play. He says no other Maharaja has his own theatrical company, and he'll be the first. He'll lead the way. Think of it, Mary!"